Welcome to the podcast, where we challenge conventional thinking and explore fresh, forward-looking perspectives on leadership. Whether you're a seasoned executive or an aspiring leader, join us on a journey to uncover the complexities of modern leadership. Because leadership itself may not change, but the way we think about it is constantly evolving. This is Rethinking Leadership, a podcast by T. Yas Business School, hosted by Executive Professor Rumer Visser.
Guest in today's episode is Dr. Jill Bolte-Taylor. Dr. Jill is a Harvard-trained neuroanatomist, knows everything there is to know about molecular cell structures in the brain, miniature circuitry, and has had a lifelong fascination with it. And one of the reasons we are talking today is the uniqueness of her story, in that in the late 90s, she suffered a hemorrhage in the brain, which caused the left hemisphere of the brain essentially to be knocked out, and it led to an eight-year-long recovery period. And that in turn led to, when she rose to fame, really was her 2008 TED Talk, which then later resulted in the book called My Stroke of Insight. Dr. Jill has more recently written a book called Whole Brain Living. And that, of course, is, well, her whole experience and view of the world is the subject of today. And obviously we'll be exploring, you know, some lessons to be learned for leadership. So, Dr. Jill, welcome in the show. Great to have you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited to apply the anatomy of the brain to leadership and insights that can be gained. So thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So if it's okay with you, we'll just jump right in.
Please.
I was wondering, would you introduce us to Helen, please?
Helen! So Helen is, when you think about the human brain, there are four different significant modules of cells. And each of those cells, two emotional groups of cells, one in each hemisphere, and two thinking groups of cells, one in each hemisphere. So each hemisphere has both thinking and feeling. And the thinking in the left hemisphere portion of our brain, this is the portion of our brain that is the interface between our internal world and the world outside of ourselves. So my relationship with myself, I have an identity. I am Jill Bolte-Taylor. It's a tiny little group of cells in that left hemisphere. And so with an identity, I have the boundaries of where I begin and where I end as a biological creature. So this portion of myself has a division between myself and other people. And then it is my relationship with things in the external world, which I am very good at characterizing, organizing. I like to control people, places, and things. I like to control time, so I'm generally very punctual. And this is the part of ourselves that is essentially known as our A-type personality, our rational thinking portion of our brain. And I call mine Helen. It's short for Hell on Wheels. She gets it done. And I know Helen very well. And Helen is the part of me that was climbing the Harvard ladder before I had that stroke. And it is the part of me that likes to be right. And it likes to define what is right, what is wrong, what is good, and what is bad. So this is, I'm guessing your specific population is pretty good relationship with recognizing this A-type personality.
Probably. Yeah. And so one of the things that's already sort of probably going to be new to some people is that what you do in your work is you essentially say Helen is an important part of who I am, but it doesn't define who I am. She's one of four main characters.
Yes, right? Exactly. Yeah. And in order to, you know, because this is our rational thinking brain, you know, we look at ourselves and say, yeah, I can take classes, I can hit deadlines, I can achieve goals, I can set goals and then achieve them. And you know, it's very pragmatic part of who we are. And I call mine Helen, but I encourage everyone, pick your own name. Did you pick a name for your character one?
I have not yet.
Okay.
No, and my initial inclination would be to call him Rumor, which of course would be a pitfall because it is not who Rumor is.
Oh, well, that is very interesting. You know, some people will name, but I encourage people to name each of these four parts of the brain that we're going to talk about, because when we honor the identity of these different portions of who we are, it helps strengthen them. And when we know, when we can differentiate ourselves in these four different parts of who we are, then we can gain a healthy relationship with each of these four characters, as well as the relationship between these four characters. And so character one, who I call Helen, that left rational thinking, I do encourage your audience to give that part of them a name that they can refer to.
Okay, great. Thank you. So we've had our first introduction to Helen, and hopefully our listeners have a lot of recognition. Yeah, that's Helen is kind of how I am, how I show up, certainly at work, and many of us at home as well to a large extent, because there we got to get stuff done as well.
Right, and we're probably looking at friends and family members who, they don't have much of a character one part of who they are. And because of that, you know, we may have to take care of them. We may have to fix things for them. We may take control of them. We may manage them, because some people are not, by nature, have a really strong character one portion of their brain. And again, each of these four characters goes to specific modules of cells inside of our brain that we all have, but to varying degrees.
Yeah, so it almost sounds like there's a kind of a self-perpetuating mechanism where the more adept character one or Helen is at meeting the needs of Dr. Jill and of the world, the more she gets recognition for it, the more it gets fed and perpetuated, and the more there is an identification with this is who I am.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And that's the really great starting point to say you are so much more than how you see yourself in your day-to-day work. And it may be very worthwhile to explore, inquire what that might be. So in order to help the listener do that, maybe we can zoom out just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can describe how you see the main differences between the two hemispheres. I know there's a lot of kind of debate. There's a lot of shorthand about reptile brain, mammal brain, analytical versus creative. So based on also your work as a scientist, what would you say is the most accurate and still useful way of describing the differentiation between the two hemispheres?
So the primary difference is that the right hemisphere is a right here, right now, present moment machine. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have a past and it doesn't have a future. The left hemisphere has these magnificent cells that literally step out of the consciousness of the present moment, bring information in from the present moment to compare it to our past so that we don't have to create the wheel with every new possibility of every moment. So the right hemisphere, it's a right here, right now machine. The left hemisphere has linearity across time. So the left hemisphere has a past and it has a future. The other primary difference is that me, the individual, my ego center, exists in my left hemisphere. So I identify myself as an individual. I know where I begin and end, where my skin hits air, because I have cells in my left hemisphere that defines me as such. And also the ego center of me and what I like and what I don't like and what I'm good at and all the data about who I am is in my left hemisphere. But the right hemisphere doesn't have any of that data. It's over there in the left hemisphere. So if I'm in my right brain and I'm in the present moment, I'm going to get lost in time because the left hemisphere is what's on the clock. I'm not on the clock in the right hemisphere. So in the present moment, I might get lost in my art, or I might get lost in a project, or I might get lost in a basketball game, or I might get lost in whatever it is I'm getting lost in, because the individual, do not exist as an individual. And the right hemisphere also, because of that, it likes to collaborate and be with others and share its experiences and its joy and its likes to team up on projects, where the left brain just, I'm going to take care of my own project. I'm going to do A, B, C, D. I'm going to get it done because I don't want to wait on those other people because I'm in a hurry over here. So the two hemispheres, those are the primary differences. Right hemisphere, right here, right now. And it's not just about me, the individual. It's more about the collective whole.
Yeah. So that sounds a little bit like, you know, when you're describing a state of flow, that you're really in that right hemisphere, right? Losing yourself in time and activity, sort of this sense of oneness with what you're doing, falling in love. There's in conversations I pick up on around me and in articles and stuff on meditation, there's almost this, may I say, a romantic infatuation with reaching that state. And it turns out to be so elusive. And that's why we have to meditate, because and it turns into a little bit of a polarized way of thinking, I believe, where anything that's ego-related, egocentric is bad, has to be rejected.
Right. Which is not true at all.
Can you say more? Because you've actually experienced, this is what makes this so mind-blowing. You have experienced what life, how life shows up for you when everything ego-related, everything language-related falls away. Can you say a couple words about what that's like?
Oh, absolutely.
It sounds blissful.
It is blissful because there's no judgment. The right hemisphere is not about judgment. The right hemisphere is about the experience in the present moment. And, you know, bottom line is when I was that little egg cell that got fertilized by that little sperm cell, and I was the single cell with this DNA half from mom and half from dad, then all I am is a tiny little cell consciousness that multiplies the DNA and then repackages in more cells and more cells and more cells, to the point where during gestation, we are multiplying the cells of our body at a rate of 250,000 cells per second, not per minute, per second. I mean, this is an explosion of biological life and development. So it's going to be the energy ball around that DNA that controls and directs all that multiplication and division at a cellular level. So then we pop out into the world and we're really just this ball of energy of all these different cells that have differentiated, but at the level of our brain, most of the brain development happens during our normal development of life up to 25 years. We're not adults classified as a biological adult until the long bones in our body stop growing, and that happens around age 25. So that means I'm developing again, constantly over this course of 25 years in what's actually happening inside of the brain. So, you know, as I then look at me, the individual, at when I identify myself as separate from being just an energy ball connected to everybody else, that is what comes online with the development of that left brain. So we end up with these two very different ways that are compatible, but are very different. One is in the present, open, connected to all that is, which is how I'm programmed through that my entire gestation and development. But then this left brain comes online and it says, but you know, I'm not all connected to all that is. I can see myself as an individual. And then I recognize I have that identity of, oh, my name is Jill. Oh, my, I begin and end where my skin meets the air. Oh, I have skills that I can develop. And then that left hemisphere comes online and I become separate from the whole. And so the ultimate goal of mindfulness is to be able to recognize which portion of my brain am I actually embodying in any moment. And the goal of meditation is to quiet the left brain language centers and ego center enough. We're not getting rid of it. We're just quieting it. It's okay to quiet it and to step into full-heartedly the experience of the present moment. And it is blissful because there is no right and wrong and good and bad without the judgment of that left brain. So essentially whole brain living, which is what I call all of this, whole brain living, the ultimate goal is to be able to differentiate those four different parts of who I am so that I can say, character one, Helen, great job. Now it's time to go and play in the woods with my dogs and play and be open and celebrate. And then it's like, and then character one in that left brain is saying, yeah, but you got to be back and cleaned up in 2 more hours because you got another appointment. And it's like this beautiful communication and collaboration between these different parts of who we are. And when we have that level of differentiation and conversation, then it's like freedom, because it's like, it's not like, oh, I got to do this, got to do this, got to do this. Well, I don't want to do this. I really want to go do that. And I want to go play some basketball because the guys are calling me and it's like, let's go do that. And I'm from Indiana and that's why I'm focused on basketball, because that's what we do here. But when we end up having all four characters navigating moment by moment who and how we want to be in any moment, then it's like, okay, what does my team inside of my own head want? And how do I do that in a way that I can satisfy all my needs and really live a life feeling peaceful?
Yeah. Great. So what I think I'm hearing you say is, you know, the version of you, if you will, the character that is most dominantly present in your day-to-day life is likely to be what you call character one, who you've called Helen. It's the go-getter. It's the one that's making distinctions between me and other, between us and them, between good and bad. So there's judgment, moral judgment being passed. It is also focused on past and future, worrying about the future, fretting about what might have happened in the past. And the idea is that's only basically 25% of your brain. There are three other regions that also deserve to get some attention.
Right.
And one of the things you said in your TED Talk that you ended your 2008 TED Talk with is we have the freedom to choose.
Right.
And I'd like to explore that a little bit, because if you are, you know, let's say you spend 95% of your waking time in Helen.
Yeah.
Helen is not going to choose to give the other characters space. So there's a different version of I that's necessary to even recognize that there is a choice.
Right.
How do you bring that, I guess, I don't know, superseding I, if you will. How do you bring that to the fore?
Yeah. So first of all, somebody might be saying, I'm happy with my Helen. I'm happy with my character one. What are they talking about? Why on earth would I want to be anything other than what I am? I'm climbing my ladder. I'm in my years of development. I'm doing my thing. I'm doing well. I'm prospering. What are they talking about? Why would I want to be anything other than what I am? And first of all, the reason why you would want to be something other than just what you are is that when it comes to neurons and the brain cells, the more often you run a circuit, the stronger that circuit becomes, and then it begins to run automatically on its own as a habit, cognitive or emotional. And that's all great, but the fact of the matter is that as human beings, because we have these four distinctively different parts of who we are, as a human being, I'm going to thrive at my top game as a healthy human being when I know all different parts of who I am. Because especially when it's going to come to leadership, because one form of leadership is going to happen with that character one thinking, rational, analyzing part of who we are. But genius is in our right hemisphere. Left hemisphere is facts. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Anybody can manipulate that. Some of us faster than others. Some of us deeper content than others. But overall, there's no genius in the facts. The genius comes in the right hemisphere. And how can I creatively look at this person and say that person, in order for me to motivate them as their leader, how do I look at them as a whole being and capitalize on their most natural skill sets and if I can help them develop these other skill sets also, then they become a better contributor to the whole as well. So ultimately, if there are four characters inside of me, because there are these four different parts of their brain, and each person that I am managing or leading, and to me, leadership is how do I get someone to produce the best of what they are to contribute to the team. Right.
Yep.
And if there's four of me inside of me and there's four in every other person, that means for every two of us, there's eight of us, eight mm-hmm. different profiles. Yep. And the better I understand and can differentiate those skills in me, and I can identify those skills in someone else, then we have a real relationship. And it's like, and it, when they know that my goal is for them to produce what they love to produce and do what they love to do, then I'm managing them better than if I'm simply dictating to them, here's the project, here's your job, get it done, and here's your deadline.
Yeah.
So, and then if you have, let's say something happens that's kind of traumatizing, let's say a pet dies or a family member gets sick, and now I'm in the portion of my pain, How do I manage your pain in a loving and kind and open way so that you feel held and heard and you still feel we gain a valuable relationship between ourselves? So whole brain living is really about me differentiating the different parts of my brain, kind of like a hand. When we're born, we have a hand and it flops around and it pushes and it pulls. And I can use it that tool as a tool to do certain things. But as soon as I learn manual dexterity of those four different fingers in relationship to that opposing thumb, now I have a whole new level of power and control in the world. And that's essentially what we're trying to do with our brain. When I can differentiate those different parts, embody by choice each of those different parts, then I can manifest peace in my own life regardless of my external circumstance. And if you are emotionally triggered, I don't have to come in and tit for tat you with emotional reactivity. I can hold that space for you. I can use my rational thinking portion of my brain to try to set you up for success. I can come in and hold the space with my right hemisphere thinking portion of me and be loving and compassionate. And then my little character three, the right emotional portion of my brain, can come in and kind of coax you into a little play. Let's have a little play in our creativity. And it's just a magnificent way of looking at myself in relationship to others.
Yeah. The image that comes up in my mind as I'm hearing you talk is sort of the orchestra conductor who has four musicians.
Yeah.
And sometimes you give one musician the floor, sometimes you give the other one the floor, depending on what's needed in the moment. And that's a really nice sort of nuance to, you know, how to handle Helen, because conventional common sense almost would dictate, well, Helen is just so dominant, she just needs to shut up. And there are people who go to great lengths to try and, quote unquote, kill that voice, to really silence that voice. And what you're saying is, no, that's not the idea. But if you recognize you have multiple selves, if you will, to use that term, multiple regions of the brain, multiple personalities that all have something unique to bring, and you can really cultivate that awareness, and I'm now really speaking to the audience here, then you can recognize that same complexity in the people that you are leading, that you're trying to reach, that you're trying to influence. And it's going to...
Exactly.
And one of the things that also occurred to me as you were talking is that, you know, that left brain that keeps the chatterbox, that keeps comparing what's happening now to the past.
Yeah.
That also shows up in leadership. I have been working with you for a couple of years. There's a lot of past that comes up and troubles the interaction because, quote unquote, my version of Helen...
Yeah.
Already knows who you are.
Yeah.
Already knows who Jill is because I have lots of data to back it up. And it keeps me, it kills the curiosity and it kills off possibilities.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so how can I be motivated if I'm in my pain? How can I be motivated to produce when that's not what that part of my brain does? And so if I'm in my pain, how can you compassionately help manage me as your worker, as your team mate, your person who you're managing? How do you do that? How do you do that? You know, and the better you understand these parts of yourself, but boy, I tell you, that character won Helen. She's powerful. Yeah. And I'm at IU, Indiana University, and, you know, our School of Business is world known. And, you know, this is what we're developing. We're developing our numbers. We're developing our marketing. We're developing our accounting. We're developing all these very left-brain tools, but true genius is not in that left brain. And if I need a team to bust out of its thinking and move into creative, you know, I do some work with some companies brought in for leadership training, and the left brain is terrified of the right brain creative forces because they can't control them, and they can't have the very predictable, you know, well, I need to know what the number of beans are going to be. And the right-brainers are going, I can't tell you how many more you're going to sell, but I can tell you that this design is going to be more inspirational to the person who is making a decision on the shelf than that one. And so, you know, so these, I mean, the two hemispheres play out in every avenue of business, as well as every avenue of our personal lives and our personal relationships, because we all have all four of these characters. Yeah. So, by knowing this material, it really can give you an advantage in how you manage yourself in relationship to other people.
Exactly. One of the things that always struck me is that even many of the people who are known as, you know, hard-nosed, transactional, you got to deliver results. If you don't deliver, you're out, right? Yeah. That almost...
You don't have value.
Yeah. No. Your value is determined by your results and by your activity level.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's just one part of the brain that says
it's just
that.
One part talk of one person's brain talking to another part of another person's brain.
Yeah. That conversation's only going to take you so far.
That's correct.
Because it's just data. That at that point it's just right, wrong, good, bad data. And genius is not in the data.
And the interesting thing is they'll go home at night, and my assumption here is that they are delightful human beings at home.
Yeah.
That may not always be the case, but you know, we can see that it's very context driven.
Yeah.
Very loving with their kids, very loving with and understanding whatever with their pets, compassionate and be good, upstanding citizens in the community and go to church every Sunday. But something happens when we show up at work, we put ourselves in this harness of linear thinking, causal thinking, data driven decision making, reducing risk, maximizing control.
Yeah.
And we don't see what that's doing to ourselves, to our conversations and the people around us.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason that becomes emphasized on the job is because, you know, we've talked a lot about that left rational thinking part of the brain, but the left emotional part of the brain, this is all of our fear of me and my identity. And am I worthy? And so if I have any doubt or any concern about my own self-value, then that fear drives that left thinking portion of my brain. And it's all about right, wrong, good, bad. It is not you at all nuanced in the more open possibility of I'm a magnificent biological creature. I am not AI. And the biggest difference between any robot that is going to be created is, yes, they will master all the data, all the details, just like a calculator. Boy, when the calculator came online and we weren't doing math by hand anymore, you know, we were of that era, right? Yeah. So it was like, oh, everybody's saying, oh, oh, they're going to lose the nuances of math. Yep. And we did. We lost the nuances of math because it just came down to the data, just the bottom line and how to manipulate now a tool. And so that's where we are with AI, and the separation between what AI is and what a human is this right hemisphere that can slow down, take a pause, bring in information, let there be this lift of self into possibility. And as we're then in the possibility, it's gut driven. It's not data driven. So the genius is, you know, the AI systems so far are just data driven, facts. But you can put that together a million different ways, but all you're working with is the data set that you have. And the right brain of the human allows you to really think out of the box and make additions and subtractions in order to come up with something completely new. Yeah. So that's the magnificence of that right hemisphere. So allowing, you know, so many people would say to me, oh yeah, I'm the left brain. You know, my wife, she's the right brain. And it's like, well, so together we make a whole brain. And it's like, you know, you're missing your own piece when you do that.
You're each missing half your brain.
Because my piece comes from all parts of all cylinders firing, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm supposed to be. This is the evolution of humanity. And if we as humans are going to evolve, we can't put all the energy and effort into one part of our brain.
Yeah.
We need to bring all of it to as a brain using all parts.
Exactly. And there's a lot of literature these days and attention on, you know, tapping into the wisdom of the crowd, getting the best thinking out of people, because that's where the added value is.
Yeah.
I was just curious, as I was reflecting on what you were saying earlier, I'm wondering if it's too much of a stretch, but it seems as though kind of the emotional life of somebody who's mostly inhabiting the left brain, that emotional life is characterized mostly by fear and anxiety. Is that fair to say?
Well, it is designed to step out of the consciousness of the present moment and to look at the present moment information streaming in and compare that to my past. Have I ever seen anything like this before, so that I can look at this now as a threat or as a danger that I need to shut down and push it away? Yeah. I mean, that's why we have that part of the brain, so that we don't have to recreate the wheel constantly.
But if I'm hearing you correctly, you're not in the left brain. You're not necessarily scanning for possibility. You're scanning for threat.
No. You're not scanning for possibility at all. You're scanning for danger and threat.
Exactly. Okay, so then I did get that right. And then it makes sense to say, well, left brain is what we don't want. But actually, that's not your argument. You're saying no. I think if I can summarize your argument, it's the left brain is what many other people would call the mind that they're trying to quiet. It is a, what is it? It is a fantastic servant, but a terrible master.
That is very true. And that is because it's a great servant because it is so functional.
Yes.
It's amazing. It knows numbers. It knows language. It knows alphabet. It knows how to communicate. It knows hierarchy. It knows time. It's an amazing tool.
Yeah.
But that's not where, you know, it's loud. It's preoccupied. It's busy. It's analyzing. But you just need to quiet that down. The left emotion comes in and says, I'm safe and I want more of what I have, or that's not safe, I want less of what I have. But the thing about that pain from the past is that we have to have pain from the past, because pain, whether it's physical pain or emotional pain, is something that says this disrupts my energy.
Mm-hmm.
It disrupts my thinking, my life. It disrupts me because now I'm running from my pain. But if I pause and I hold my pain and I say, pain, what are you trying to tell me?
Yeah.
Well, if I've kicked and hit my shin, that pain is telling my immune system, hey, we got tissue damage. You need to come down here and bring the immune system and do some healing. But if it's an emotional pain, then it's like, okay, every time I see a guy of a certain age with a red hat, because I had a bad experience when I was a teenager with a guy who had a certain look with a red hat. Now, whenever I see that, I move into alarm. That's alarm. Pay attention. It doesn't mean shut it down and close it off. It means let's evaluate, because that experience I had was 20 years ago, but it's a good warning for me. But I can look at that, I can heal that, and I can grow. So I have to have that pain from the past in order to grow and heal. So you know, so many people say to me, oh, I'd really like to, you know, cut that part of my brain out. And it's like, oh, no. Yeah. It is our learning and our growth. And through learning and growth, we can heal. And when we heal, we can transform ourselves into even a higher level of function in the world, because we've done our work. We've faced the monsters, if you will.
Yes. Yeah.
And that left brain doesn't want to face the monsters. It wants to either battle, fight, flee, or freeze in the pain and the fear, push it away, and come back up and be more rational again. But the problem with that is information streams in from our sensory systems and goes straight into our emotional systems.
Yeah.
One in each hemisphere. We have an amygdala in each hemisphere, mm-hmm. alarm, alarm, alert, alert, and we have a hippocampus in each hemisphere. So we are feeling creatures who think. We have to manage that emotional part of who we are. Otherwise, if we use our thinking parts of our brain to squash it down, we're just going to plug it like a pipe that has pressure pushing on it, and eventually it's going to blow. And so then we look like we're passive aggressive, or we look like we're raging all the time, because now we don't know how to manage that piece of who we are. Or we engage in behaviors, drugs, alcohol, sex, technology, just, you know, these addictions, which is also in that portion of our brain that is the emotion of that left hemisphere.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. And a minute ago, you said we are emotional creatures or feeling creatures.
Feeling creatures who think.
Who are able to think. But you have also said, if I think about something, you know, then it evokes a feeling. That's that 90-second rule, right? There's a thought that's followed by a feeling and a physiological response, which then lasts around 90 seconds, and then it's gone again.
Yes. As a living creature, as a biological creature, only three things are going on inside of our brain. We are thinking thoughts, we are feeling emotions, and we are running a physiological response to what we are thinking and what we're feeling. So from the moment I think a thought, let's say I think of you, mm-hmm. and I love you. And so I think of you, and that thought stimulates this emotion of I love you.
Yeah.
And then I'm running this physiological loop of, oh, I love him so much. And I may have all these thoughts about you, and I may have these emotions about you. But from the moment I think the thought until you've completely flushed out of my thoughts and my heart, it literally takes less than 90 seconds. And that's the 90-second rule.
Yeah.
So if I become emotionally triggered, even in a negative way, let's say I think of someone and they make me very angry and I feel all this anger, it literally, that specific loop takes 90 seconds. So, but, you know, I can stay angry at you for much longer than 90 seconds. But what I'm doing is I'm rethinking the thoughts that are re-stimulating the emotions. The emotions are flooding my bloodstream, flushes through me, floods out of me, literally takes less than 90 seconds.
Yeah. So I think what you're saying is we can break that cycle.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Stop feeding it and it'll go away.
Yeah.
It really, once you master that, it's only 90 seconds.
Yeah.
And still, in this example, we start with a thought and then that evokes a feeling. So that kind of makes me curious, and it's a bit of a forced choice. Which is it? Is it feeling comes first and then the feeling engenders a thought, or does a thought engender the feeling, or is it 50-50?
So I think that's going to be unique to the individual, but at a biological level, the information comes in, it goes into my emotions,
yeah.
and then the tissue that expands beyond the emotions to regulate and modulate the emotions is the thinking tissue.
Gotcha.
So I can think a thought that's going to stimulate the emotion below, or I can stimulate an emotion and it just explodes, and then I just start thinking on it all the time and da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a linked loop. That's the point.
Yeah.
But from the moment that it really starts hooking in, and the loop begins, it's a reflex, just like a patellar reflex on your leg, except that's between a brain group of brain cells and a muscle cell. But we're having all these emotions, and emotions are these reflexive loops between neurons inside of the brain.
Yeah, yeah, gotcha. Okay, and so essentially, I think what you're arguing here is we have a lot more choice in sort of our emotional state, mental emotional state, a lot more choice than we think.
Yeah, we have so much more power over what's going on inside of our brains than we've ever been trained. And, you know, that makes sense because as a species, we're simply living our lives exhibiting behaviors.
Yeah.
But it took a neuroanatomist, someone who studies the brain, to lose the cells of that left hemisphere, both thinking and emotional, to experience a completely untethered, uninhibited right hemisphere. And then it took 8 years for me to use that right hemisphere to rebuild the skill sets and personality profiles of that left brain in order to become whole-brained. So it makes sense from a neuroanatomical perspective, from a psychological perspective, and from a personal experience by a neuroanatomist having this experience about her expertise.
Yeah, yeah. And still, I was wondering if I could press you a little bit more on that, because I've heard you say we are neurocircuitry. Every skill, every capability we have is reflected in the circuitry that we have.
That's right.
And you have also identified the four different regions, more or less, of the brain with these different, I guess, personality characters.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, though, what does that do with free will? Because there are people who say we have no free will, is an illusion. It's all been predetermined by patterns of cognition in the brain, and we think we're making a decision, but our brain has already decided for us.
I think that's a very close-minded left brain perspective.
Okay, that's good.
And I think anybody who has a right brain would not have that same opinion. And I think that if I feel that I have no free will, then I'm using the part of my brain that does not have free will. And I agree that character one left rational thinking, and that character two that is programmed. But the point of the matter is we can use the rest of our brain in order to add new possibility. So I do believe that the road to free will is to know the part of your brain that has free will.
Yeah. Okay, so I think what you're saying is, yeah, left brain is more or less programmed. You can make an argument there that it's very reactionary.
It's a tool. It's an instrument.
Yep.
It's a servant. That's why the master and his emissary. Yeah, the left brain is a terrific servant. Yep. Terrific. Magnificent. But there's no genius there.
That's that prediction machine that keeps humming along on autopilot.
Yeah, and the right brain is possibility.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Yeah.
What would you say? So let's say that you've convinced the listener that, you know, yes, I recognize I spend far too much time, scanning for removing threats, solving problems, looking at spreadsheets, trying to minimize risk, maximize control, all of that.
Congratulations. Those are fantastic skill sets.
Yes.
Fantastic skill sets, but they're also draining, and they're constricting, and they're detail, more detail about those details. And it's your stress circuitry.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, we know how that feels inside of the body. And then what do you do? You know, then what do you do? Well, if you want to get into your right brain, go for a walk. And don't take your get off your phone. First of all, get off your technology. Get into the present moment. And in the present moment, go somewhere where you can have the literally uplifting of your chest as you look into the sky and you look into random bits of pieces moving around with just an awareness that they exist at all. So when people say, Jill, how do you get into your right brain? I say, well, for me, it's more like, how do I get into my left brain? Because for me, my right brain is what's primary, because I like the way it feels. I prefer the present moment. So, but I encourage anybody, you know, look outside, look at a tree, just look at a tree and don't analyze the tree. Don't define what kind of tree or what season it is or what any, you know, colors the bark, you know, don't analyze it like that left brain wants to do, but just kind of look at it and look at the whole tree and let yourself see little bits of movement here and there, and then allow yourself not to focus on the leaf that is moving, but feel your energy shift into being the movement of whatever's moving. Now, at this point, your audience is probably going, oh, my God, this girl is so taking the woo-woo leap. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is that this is, we're biologically programmed to be open and expansive. What does it feel like when you're standing on a beach and you're watching the sunset and the waves are coming in and the rocks are spraying spray and creatures are running around on the beach and you just allow yourself to be in this big picture phenomenon of, oh my God, I'm alive. And that's the point is, oh my God, I'm alive. And, you know, this might mean looking at yourself in a mirror and just looking at yourself without any analysis, but simply looking at yourself and going, I'm alive. I'm alive. What does that mean? That means that these 50 trillion cells that create manifest life for me, I can wiggle my finger because I have cells that do that. I have bladder capacity because I have cells that do that. I have ears that can hear and eyes that can see and legs that move me with mobility into the world. Oh my gosh, I'm alive. I'm this amazing thing. And allow yourself to shift out of the just to do production by the entity that is you to the wonder of what you are. And when you reach that stage of awe and wonder of, oh my gosh, and I have a spouse or I don't, or I have children or I don't, or I like to do this or that or the other, or I don't, but the awareness that I am so capable of so many different things. But if my left brain fear says all of my value is in this tiny little group of cells that I define as me, the individual, then it's about me and mine and I want more. And the left brain never has enough. It never has enough. While the right hemisphere is completely content with exactly what it is in any moment.
Yeah, I'm getting that image of two siblings, the younger one of which is always competing neurotically for attention, and the older sibling doesn't need to. And as a result, the younger sibling keeps claiming the space and hogging the microphone and claiming the attention.
Yeah, and that's the thing about this brain is that you know, balanced. You know, we are all about, how do I find balance in my life? Multi-billion dollar, you know, businesses. How do I find balance? Well, you find it by simply getting to know the four parts of who you are and learning to value each of these parts for the skill sets that they bring to our lives and see how that is our team. My team is not my character one, Helen. She's a strong, wonderful part of my team. I wouldn't be non-functional without her. But if that's all I have, then then where's my peace, my deep inner peace? It's in the right thinking tissue of my right hemisphere. Where's my joy, my celebration, my possibility, my music, my athleticism, my art, my creativity, my possibility, my joy is in my right hemisphere emotional tissue. So when I know each of these parts of who I am and I identify each of them and I give each of them identities and embody them, then there's never conflict in my life because the team is constantly negotiating with itself as to who and how I want to be in any moment.
And it sounds like you're saying you're a little bit of a disadvantage maybe because the listener's version of Helen has been so dominant that you need practice to let the other three characters give a little bit more, claim a little bit more space and create those neural pathways as well.
Yeah.
And so it's not just about being in a state of wonder or curiosity or awe once or twice, but trying to really tap into that frequently so you can embed that and create these new brain circuitries.
Yeah, because once again, what neurons we run, what loops we create become habits. So why wouldn't I want it to be a habit that I've got half an hour, I'm going to get completely off grid and I'm going to go be creative and do something fun and interesting. And then I'm going to come back and take that next meeting already invigorated and uplifted by that other character that I allowed myself to embody. And might I say, I rarely do this, but for your specific audience, I'm going to, I have written a beautiful book for you.
Okay.
Whole Brain Living is written for character ones, and your analytical mind. And it will, I will gently pry you not just away from that, but to completely own your power in that part of who you are, because whole brain living isn't about making any of them not have value.
Exactly.
Whole brain living is about recognizing the value of all parts of yourself so that you can mindfully and enthusiastically embrace all these different parts of you, who you are, so you can live a more peaceful life, be more productive, be more creative, be more functional, and know how to hold your own little heart when you feel emotionally triggered. So it's really beautiful material.
Yeah. And in doing so, as a leader, you're not only giving other people permission to do the same, you're in fact going to be supporting them in making that same step.
And might I add that when they have the same language of their four characters, the power of this material for a person is, whole brain living is finding all these parts of who I am. But when my teammates, I can guarantee you, when your teammates know four characters of who they are and the four characters of who you are, and they start using that language, everything changes, because now instead of my team, my four in me and four in you, not having open communication, now I pick up my phone and I'll call my friends and I'll say, how are you doing? And they'll say, well, my character one is great because she's working on this project and we're getting it done and everything, and I'm on time and I feel successful. And they say, and my little character two, well, I'm a little brokenhearted because, my dog stopped eating and it's like, it just breaks my heart, or whatever it is that's not good. And my little character three, though, I'm now playing with epoxy down in the art space, and it's very exciting because I'm doing this, that, and the other. And my character four, I just feel so content in my life, and I just feel like I'm living a meaningful life.
Yeah.
And in that, less than 60 seconds, I know how my friend is. I know what they're doing, what's on their heart, what's on their mind. And it was a boom. And it's so deep because it's the differentiation of who each of us is as human beings.
Well, on that beautiful note, Dr. Jill Bolte-Taylor, thank you so much for your presence in this episode. The book is Whole Brain Living. Highly recommended to check it out if any of this piqued your interest. Dr. Jill, thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Rumer. I so appreciate it, and I so appreciate your audience. Mm-hmm.